The Vox Markets Podcast.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You're right, Russ?
Yes, very well. Thank you, Justin. Very well indeed. Happy Halloween. Is that nearly upon us? I think it is, isn't it?
So. Oh, yeah. My son's already nagging me to put the Halloween decorations up. Maybe soon. Yeah, whatever. And then after that, it'll be Christmas.
Anyway, yes,
less
fine.
Than 2 months.
Move on.
Well, the good thing is about Christmas, I've just been looking at, I'm obsessed with the AIM All Share. It's been down for like 22 out of the last 25 sessions. And it's really oversold. Like I said, at the moment, if a company puts news out, it's almost like it heads above the parapet and it gets shot off. And like you did say, apart from the Magnificent Seven, then nothing else seems to be working, you know?
It's really hard, isn't it? And if it worked for those big seven US mega caps, I think the world would look a lot less happy. And even there, with their numbers this week, even though they've generally been good, they haven't received a rapturous response, which slightly makes you worry that you're at the situation, you know, that old saying, oh, well, everybody's got them anyway. Where's the incremental buy coming from? And I think that is a challenge for those companies when valuations are so lofty. And I mean, again, you're the technical expert here, but I know that off the top of my head, the S&P 500 is down 10 to 12% from its all-time high in 2021. Yeah. The NASDAQ is quite a long way down below its 2021 all-time high, even allowing for the Magnificent Seven.
NASDAQ is down 13% pretty much.
And the S&P equal weighted this year is down. So those seven companies are up, but the other 493, believe me, they're not doing anything at all. So I guess what's interesting is that, you know, small and mid-caps, let's face it, are the lifeblood of any economy, smaller companies. They're vastly the biggest employees in aggregate. Yeah. So I'm just sort of wondering, great for Magnificent Seven, clearly dominant, managing to keep the regulator at bay, keeping customers happy, well played. But if they're, let's face it, who are their customers? Well, it's the other 493 companies, right?
So if they
are enjoying themselves,
you
would be slightly worried. And that's why Meta, I think, were a little bit more guided on advertising volatility, repeating what WPP had said about adverts and the Mission Group had said about advertising, albeit on a different scale in Mission Group's case. And, you know, you've seen some iffy, you know, earnings reports from Texas Instruments and one or two of the semiconductor companies. So it just does feel as if, I know we got a really strong US headline number yesterday on Thursday, 4.9% annualized. And consumer spending was up, private corporate investment was up, government spending was up, all good. But, you know, we know that's a backward looking number. And you just look at what the small cap share price action is. And that kind of, to me, feels, you know, telling you, well, this is what those companies are going to be doing in terms of their spending and hiring in a year's time. And it's not looking that pretty. So at the moment, I think the big crutch for the American economy is federal government spending up 6.2% year on year. But we can all see how U.S. government debt's going through the roof. Yeah. And we can see how that's upsetting the bond market, because that's why the U.S. 10-year Treasury yields at around 5% nearly.
Yeah, well, if you look at the Russell 2000, which is a small cap in America,
that's an ugly chart. That's the third off its high.
Yeah, 33% from its high now. November 21st. Yeah, 33%. And the AIM All Share down 48% from the all-time high in September 2021. So it's a struggle. And I was thinking those, you know, I think it was Jeremy Grantham who said it, that those Magnificent Seven, or for five of them, are different beasts. They're different animals. They're still growing like small or mid caps. And if you, I just speaking yesterday with a colleague saying, if you look at it, all of us, how pervasive these companies are, there's not, I doubt you'll find a person in this world who doesn't use at least one of their products, maybe two or three, you know, Google, Apple.
They'd have to be living in a cave somewhere,
exactly.
I think. You'd be pretty hard struck.
Yeah, and so, you know, exactly, I use Microsoft, you know, I use Apple, I use Google, and so three of the products I use, at least. And I mean, if anyone doesn't use one, they probably are living in a cave, so that's how pervasive they are. So they're not like any other company. But it's a struggle. But I was saying, talking about Christmas, it's not a bad thing. I've been going back in the last couple of sessions, looking at the performance of the AIM All Share over the last 10 years into the last quarter, the last November. And essentially,
Tell me there's a Santa rally.
Well, it's a 70% chance of a rally in the fourth quarter for the last 10 years. Now, in November, again, 70%. December, 80% chance. So the stats, and it tends to help if there's been a bit of a sell-off beforehand as well. So it sort of bounces. So we are, I think, The bull season is coming soon, hopefully. Well, the rally season maybe, but maybe it's a bounce season. Who knows? But hopefully it'll translate. Yeah. So the scary thing is that you can't avoid it. Is that, you know, 10-year yield of the bond, in a U.S. bond,
and that's what's happening. Is that the
why
key story?
Why is the bond selling off so much? What's the problem?
I think there are three reasons. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen gave a fourth yesterday, so we'll start with her explanation, which is the U.S. economy is doing better than everybody thought.
Mm.
Which, frankly, it's quite hard to argue with the maths. When we were doing these podcasts a year ago, everybody was talking about a US recession and a global recession, right? Well, it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
So in that respect, you can say, okay, fair play. I can poke at the foundations of that US GDP growth number. A lot of it is based on US government spending and therefore debt. Consumer spending is hanging in there, but the savings rate is well below historic averages and credit card usage is going up, which is not normally a good sign. And the corporate spending numbers actually are okay. So I'm finding it very hard. I wouldn't want to tear too many holes in that, quite frankly. So the one explanation is the US is just doing better than everybody thought.
Yeah.
Fair play. The second one is therefore that feeds into inflation because it means the economy is poor and we know that unemployment is low. And then you've got the Fed talking as a result of all of that, higher for longer. I mean, if you look at the CME FedWatch page, and when I wrote my last weekly, I think there was a sort of a, I don't know, 5 or 10% chance of a rate cut next week. Now it's zero. Yeah. There's actually now more chance of a rate increase going to the markets at the December meeting than there is a cut. And the first cut's been pushed all the way out to July 24. So obviously the 10 years going to listen to that. Mm-hmm. And then for me, the final reason, and I think this is a biggie, the one that probably Treasury Secretary Yellen's trying to slightly sweep under the carpet, is US government debt continues to gallop higher.
Yeah.
Bidenomics is definitely generating GDP growth through the CHIPS Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, and the plan is for that to generate long-term benefits in terms of chip supply, renewable energy, da-da-da. Great. But right now, since the last debt ceiling was raised, in April, and the fudges we've had subsequently, America's piled on, $1.5-2 trillion of debt. Its annualized interest bills running at $1 trillion a year, which isn't funny when your tax income is 5 and your welfare budget is 3 and your defense budget is 1. So that's all the money gone before we've talked about education or anything else.
Yeah.
And I think America has got nearly half of its aggregate 17 of its debt to refinance in the next 2 years when all bonds mature and new ones have to be issued. So that again is going to drive your interest bill higher because rates are a heck of a lot higher now than they were then. Mm-hmm. So I think the markets are looking at a lot of new debt, a lot of old debt being refinanced, which is a big increase in supply. And therefore, you've got political carnage in Washington when nothing's happening. You've got an election coming up next year. So there will be a point at which markets say the yield is high enough to compensate me for the risks I can perceive.
Yeah.
Maybe 5 is the magic number. Maybe because it's rallied a little bit off that this week. But 5%, fine. It's not a scary number historically, though it is when your debt number is so high.
Yeah.
But also, when the US equity market is yielding 1% with 2% on top from buybacks, you can get 5% risk-free from the US government, or you can get a bit of, you can get maybe 3% yield in terms of plus with buybacks and from the US equity market, but potentially for a lot more risk after a mega run in a very, very imbalanced market when only 7 companies are really making any difference. So you can see why people might be thinking, well, I'll just, take a little bit less risk and park some money in treasuries. Thank you very much. And in the end, that 5% number, that treasury, that is the risk-free rate. America's never defaulted on its debt. It's always paid you back. All right, there's inflation to think about. But nevertheless, you've always got your money back. So any investment that you make must return you more than 5% to justify the additional risks that you're taking. And how do you get the additional pickup? Well, you pay a lower price, and that's why share prices are going down right now.
Yeah.
But lower valuations. It's just maths, I'm afraid.
Yeah. And the thing is, like you said, that's the worrying thing. I did read somewhere, I think it was a Blinier posted, or someone copied a Blinier, saying that the people who are feeling the most pain at the moment, apart from low-paid families with debt,
small-cap shareholders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also the Fed. They said that it's cost them so much. And
it's insolvent.
If it was
the markets, bond holdings to market, the Fed, the Bank of it, they'd all be insolvent. Now, in the end, they're not insolvent because they don't have to mark to market, and they can print more money even if they did. But again, the money printing thing is what's got bond markets on edge, and that's what got inflation watchers on edge, and it's one of the reasons why gold's having another tickle at $2,000 an ounce.
Yeah. In the last meeting, I think Jerome Powell did say this is unsustainable, this path we're on. So you think, okay, but yields keep going up and bonds keep going down. You're thinking, well, this cost you a lot of money. But where to stop? But I'm just hoping seasonality comes into it, and we see a bit of a rally for some reason. And sometimes it is very, everything we see at the moment is so gloomy, you know. And when you can't see a way forward, sometimes that's exactly when the market.
The darkest hour is before the dawn. Of that, there's absolutely no doubt. And we also know that markets will do what they can to inflict the maximum number of pain on the maximum number of people.
Yeah.
Because if something's blindingly obvious, it's in the price, and that's what everybody's positioned for. So you know at some stage the opposite's going to turn around because something's going to happen to change perception, or the prices just get so just either too stretched on the upside or too cheap on the downside, and the opposite's going to start to happen. I know you and I have been arguing that UK equities are cheap.
Yeah.
Since we've been, forever, and we're still arguing it. And in all honesty, they're still going nowhere. And again, some of the small and mid-cap action, particularly in things like financials and real estate, they're just breaking down. And it just doesn't matter how cheap they are. They're trading at below book value, and nobody cares. So you need something to change perception. Valuation on its own is important. It'll save you a lot of pain over the long run, but it's not a catalyst in itself. You need something to change perception. And right now, there's nothing to change perception. All you're getting is a little bit more worries over recession. So things like the pawnbrokers are going back up again, and the financials are going down again because they're frightened of higher loan losses going forwards. And until something happens to change that narrative, it's going to be hard for some of those companies.
Yeah.
Share price wise, at least.
Well,
CEOs are telling you a different thing altogether. They're not seeing any major problems. They're obviously on their guard because they're smart and they don't want to make themselves a hostage to fortune. But the share prices. The disconnect between what we're hearing from management teams and what the share price is telling us in financials is just huge.
Yeah. Well, there's one catalyst, Russ, and it's a man who's slightly rotund, wears a red suit, and has a white beard.
Oh. There you go. Santa Rally, here we come.
That's at the moment, that's all we can pin our hopes on. And nothing else will be a catalyst. But you know what? It's funny how when you have a big sell-off, and most of the markets, like I said, apart from the S&P, because of the magnificent, when you have a massive sell-off and it's technically everything is down and oversold, the bounce back can be quite aggressive because people almost jump back in. And like I said, selling begets selling, like buying begets buying. People chase it. And so you almost have the shorts closing, all that stuff, and then money rushing in, and the bounce can be very quick. And like you say, it's almost when people don't believe it's ever going to happen, and it does.
Yeah, it's when the wet towels come into the ring. That's when it really gets interesting, for sure. And the VIX isn't there yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at what's happening in the world, where is it, 20?
Yeah, so 20,
you look at what's happening in the world, in the Middle East, and with oil, and with you just think, why is it not at 30 or 35? Yeah. If it was, then I'd be thinking, if you're a short-term player, you'd definitely be having a look. And if you're a long-term player, you'd be doing your research and where you think there's some value. Mm-hmm. But with the VIX at 20, doesn't feel like the wet towel's come into the ring to me yet at all.
Yeah, okay, well, I think just to cheer myself up, I'm going to put the Christmas decorations up this weekend after Halloween.
There you get the Halloween stuff out the way and get your trick-or-treating and eat your chocolate and then use the energy for that to get your Christmas decks up.
Yeah, and forget about the stock market. That's it. Marvellous. Thanks, Russ.
Have a lovely weekend.
Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.